In your Bibles, please, for our second reading to the book of the preacher, the Kohelet, Ecclesiastes, chapter 7. Ecclesiastes, chapter 7, and verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. Say not thou, what is the cause that the former days were better than these? For thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it there is profit to them that see the sun. For wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense, but the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Consider the work of God, for who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider God also hath set the one over against the other, to the end that man should find nothing after him. All things have I seen in the day of my vanity. There is a just man that perisheth in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man that prolongeth his life in his wickedness. Be not righteous overmuch, neither make thyself overwise. Why shouldest thou destroy thyself? Be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldest thou die before thy time? It is good that thou shouldest take hold of this. Yea, also from this withdraw not thine hand, for he that feareth God shall come forth of them all. Wisdom strengtheneth the wise more than 10 mighty men which are in the city. For there is not a just man upon earth that doeth good and sinneth not. Also take no heed unto all the words that are spoken, lest thou hear thy servant curse thee. For oft times also thine own breast knoweth that thou thyself likewise hath cursed others. All this have I proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. That which is far off and exceeding deep, who can find it out? I applied my heart to know and to search and to seek out wisdom and the reason of things and to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. And I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets and her hands as bands. Whoso pleaseth God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be taken by her. Behold, this have I found, saith the preacher, counting one by one to find out the account, which yet my soul seeketh, but I find not. One man among a thousand have I found, but a woman among all those have I not found. Lo, this only have I found, that God hath made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions. May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. The first section, verses 1 through 6, is a section we could spend weeks upon weeks unpacking. It's really very expert. It's brilliantly crafted, very well put together. For those of you who like to read rhetoric and prose, it is extremely well said. But the matter of it, the weight of it, is indeed even finer than the expression of it. So, first of all, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. This sets the tone for the whole. Now, I want you to hear how many things Solomon says that are counterintuitive in these first six verses. How many of us would stand on the street corner and, speaking to someone, say out loud, "You know, the day of death is better than the day of birth," and expect it to be received in saying such things? Well, it is true, isn't it, that the wisdom of God is foolish to the wise of this world? And yet, to the believing mind, can it really be any different? If man is born unto trouble as the sparks fly upward, and the day of a believer's death is being ushered into the presence of God, certainly it is true what Solomon says here. It's a matter of having right perspective. Now notice what he goes on to say. It's better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. He's going to make several implications from this fact that the day of death is better than the day of birth. The first is, learn how to mourn. Acquaint yourselves with mourning. Oh, what an upright and timely message for this culture that is laughing itself to death, that fails at seriousness with any good thing except the kind of thing that we read about in Titus about being rapacious and argumentative. Oh my, Solomon says, learn how to mourn, because the day of death is better than the day of birth. Be acquainted with those times of affliction. Be acquainted with those times of deprivation. Be acquainted with those times of loss, Solomon says. Notice also what he says, for it is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. The living there, those who walk in the land of the living, that is, those who live before God in that sense. Not simply those who live under the sun, but those who live before God. He will lay it to his heart that mourning is better than feasting. Then notice also, sorrow is better than laughter. Now wait a minute. I know we have lots of comedy clubs all over the landscape, but I haven't seen one sorrow club all over the landscape. Not one. And yet, what does Solomon say? Sorrow is better than laughter. It is more weighty. It draws out the heart. It calls upon heart searching. It is indeed something that is better, especially that godly sorrow that we talk about. Sorrow is better than laughter. For by sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. Why does the Lord afflict? Why does He send deprivation and loss? Simply answered by Solomon, to make your heart better. To make your heart better. Then notice, the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. Again, he's doubling down on the principle. No, we don't see house of mourning over the doorpost and people lined up to join. We see house of mirth and people are lined up to join there. But truly, biblically, righteously, it is better to be sorrowful. Then notice verse 5. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. Now notice there are two contrasts in that verse. The first contrast is easy, between the wise and the foolish. But the second contrast will pass by if you don't pay attention, and that is the rebuke versus the song. Did you hear that? The rebuke versus the song. So here is what Solomon is saying. The most unpleasant kind of communication that you can receive from the wise is better than the most pleasant kind of communication that you can receive from the fool. Yeah. You see how he stretches that out as far as it can be made. Indeed, the rebuke of the wise is better than the song of fools. The sweet sound of the fool is harmful, and the rebuke, the difficulty, the fervor, the rubbing up against of the rebuke of the wise is better for you than the most pleasant thing a fool can tell you. And you know why? Because Solomon goes on to say, "For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity." Okay, so put thorns. You know what thorns are, right? He's not meaning, you know, go to your rose bush and start picking off thorns. No, he's talking about like a thorny vine. A vine that is, number one, good for nothing but burning. It's got BTUs to be liberated, and that's what it's good for. It can't be used to make a house. It can't be used to make a walking stick. It can't be used to make anything substantial. The only thing it's good for is burning. But notice, what do those thorns do? What does that vine with thorns do when you put it under the pot and light it? It crackles. It makes a sound. It makes a sound that is its, as it were, last hurrah. The last little bit of usefulness it has is to crackle as it's being burnt up. That's the voice of fools. They're crackling up as they go. They are making their last hurrah. I'm not going to go quietly into the night. And then they're gone. And all their usefulness is burned up. All their usefulness. There is a usefulness there, right? To hear their crackling and say, "Not for me. Thank you." And then they stop. And then they're quiet. And then they're reduced to ash. What a wonderful way to bring to culmination that first six verses. So I told you it was really, really well written. All right, so then verses 7 through 9, 7 through 10 is next. And Solomon is continuing on in the same vein. Notice he says, better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof. Isn't that interesting? What does he mean? He's talking about things that endure. It's easy to start stuff, right? It's easy to begin. But how much better is it to finish? How much better is it to go on to the end, to reach the end of a thing? To say that you have accomplished it, that you put a bow on it, it's done. That you put the punctuation mark at the end. You have finished it. Just like he's already talked about finishing well as people, as men and women, as human beings. And so things are easy to start. But he's pressing diligence here. And it's along those same lines that he can say that the day of death is better than the day of birth. So he's speaking against haste. Better is the end of a thing than in the beginning. And the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Then he's going to go on to talk about being hasty in anger. Because anger rests in the bosom of fools. And then he's going to do something that folks often do. He's going to say, "Say not, what is the cause of the former days that were better than these? For thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this." Nostalgia is not a good way to think, in other words. Those days, while we might want to bring them back, we can't bring them back. And if we brought them back truly and fully, we would remember that our memories were but nostalgic rather than true. And so don't look back, look forward, Solomon says. And isn't that what he's been doing this whole time? Look to the end. Look to the end. Look to the end. Don't look back. Don't look to the beginning of things. Look rather to the ends of them. All right, so then in verses 11 through 22, we begin talking about riches, first of all. And there is, I think, a contrast between riches and wisdom. There's something that they have in common, and then there's something in which they're contrasted. Notice what he says. Wisdom is a defense, and an inheritance is a defense, or riches are a defense. Are riches a defense? Yes. Yes, they are. Are they a lasting defense? No. No, they're not. And that's the contrast with wisdom. They are both a defense, that's true. And there are indeed, if I can put it this way, I'll not use the King James term filthy lucre, I'll just say money grubbing. Money grubbing Christians will often point to a verse like this and they'll say, you see, riches do have something. They do. Let's admit that. They do. But they don't compare to the something that wisdom has. That's the point that's being made here. Wisdom is a defense, but it's a defense that cannot last. Solomon has told us elsewhere they make wings and fly away. As riches increase, we heard last week, what? So do them that eat them. They can't be that lasting defense. Oh, they can be a defense for a bit. And that's what makes them so attractive, and that's why they are so often set over against true Christianity. Right? That's why Jesus will say in the New Testament, you cannot serve God and mammon. Although it appears to have something that is helpful, and of course it does, it can be indeed to the ruin as well. Wisdom cannot be to your ruin. It can never be to your ruin. Now Solomon is going to talk about being overwise. And by overwise, he doesn't mean that you can be too wise. What he means is that you can pervert wisdom into something that is really not wise at all. There was an essay written in the 19th century by a student of Samuel Miller's. His name was William Sprague. And he called it The Danger of Being Overwise, or Wiser Than God. And of course, we know where his text came from Ecclesiastes chapter 7. And what was Mr. Sprague writing about? Well, he was writing about what was called in his day the temperance movement. Now, who could not be for temperance? But what they meant by that was, we need to get all the wine out of our churches and go to grape juice at the Lord's Supper. Because if you're drinking any wine at all, that would be a violation of the commandments of God. And Mr. Sprague responds, do not be overwise. And so notice it's not being overwise that you can be too wise. It's being so wise that you actually pervert wisdom and fall away from wisdom itself. And that's exactly what Solomon means here. Do not be overwise. Do not be over righteous. Well, can you be too righteous? No. But can you be legalistic? Yes. Can you be too scrupulous? Yes. And he's going to go on with a very, very interesting illustration of that. If you're in your house and you've just rebuked your servant and you hear him go away from you with and grumbling and mumbling, and you know he's speaking against you, don't be so quick to call him back and rebuke him. Why? Well, because if you search your own heart, you'll remember times when you indulged yourself in that as well. Try a little understanding next time instead. Right? Do not be overwise. Do not be over-righteous. Do not be so scrupulous, in other words. Be patient with others. Be gentle, as we heard earlier. All right, so then this takes us to the last section, verses 23 through 29. And ladies, as you may have been tempted to think as you read through this, wow, he's kind of being hard on us ladies here toward the end of the chapter. I just want you to remember who's writing here, and that Solomon often uses woman as an illustration for wisdom on the one hand and folly on the other. We've already seen that, right, in our reading of Proverbs chapters 1 through 9, where you have the right woman and the anti-woman, the good woman and the bad woman, the woman of faith and the woman of what we might call outlandish, the strange woman. Outlandish meaning off limits, outside of Israel, right? And the one is wisdom and the other is folly. And I think that's what Solomon is doing here as well. Notice how he begins the last section. All this have I proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. And so now he's going to talk about how wisdom is difficult to find. And wisdom is so difficult to find that when it's characterized as a woman, he says, what? I can't find her at all. I can't find her anywhere. He's not talking about the gentler gender, the gentler sex here. He's talking about wisdom being considered as wisdom on the one hand, as a woman, as being wisdom on the one hand, and then folly on the other. So notice what he says, verse 27. Behold, this have I found, saith the preacher, counting one by one to find out the account, which yet my soul seeketh, but I find not. One man among a thousand have I found, but a woman among all those have I not found. Lo, this only have I found, that God hath made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions. And I think it's legitimate from verse 29 to say that he's using man there generically for humankind and woman for wisdom. And so what he said is, as I've counted one by one, in all of my experience, in all of my anecdotal experience, which is indeed wider than other men's, Solomon is saying, I've counted men, not just men, but humankind, and I have not found wisdom among hardly any of them. That's the point that he's making here at the end of the chapter. All right, with that then, let's go ahead and stand and sit.